We're going to look now at the possibility for sort of world cooperation and collaboration. Jürgen Schlund is with us. He's the director of the Department of Food Safety with the World Health Organization. So, Jürgen, it's all yours. Please welcome Jürgen Schlund.
It's changing a little bit the perspective because we're now moving into the food safety area, which is the area where we have good science, as you all know. Now, when we are talking about zoonotic diseases, everybody knows some of the zoonotic diseases that are related to food production. Most people all over the world have heard of Salmonella. That's because Salmonella is a problem in all countries of the world. Now, contrary to popular belief, it's not always the case that contamination comes from the developing countries and infects all the rich countries. I think lots of people believe so. But actually, most of the big issues over the last 10, 15, 20 years have come from the developed world and moved out into the developing countries. So, Salmonella enteritidis, as some of you might know, is, I mean, there are more than 2,000 different types of Salmonella. Salmonella enteritidis is the biggest problem in most countries. This was not in Zimbabwe in the 70s. I worked some years in the 80s in Zimbabwe. I know that they did the typing the right way. I learned a lot down there. I was supposed to go there and teach them something, but I actually learned more than they did, I think. We know from the data that they have that this Salmonella enteritidis was not there in the 70s. Before 92, enteritidis had never been in Zimbabwe. In 93, we found the first isolates in poultry. Thereafter, we found them in the communal areas. So you have commercial areas with the big farms, and then you have communal areas where you have small household farms. And it moved from the big to the small because when you've used up the poultry time in the big farm, then you sell some of them to the small farms, and therefore you also sell the salmonella there. So then in 1994, we get them in the humans. This has happened all over the world. This Salmonella enteritidis was exported either from a European country that I will not name or from a North American country that I will not name. And this, I mean, we have lots of other cases. I mean, everybody knows about BSE. Where did BSE come? It comes from a European country that I will not name. And a number of these big issues, antimicrobial resistance, where did that start from? Did that start from the small subsistence farming? No, it did not. So we have lots of examples like that. People have to a little bit look at these issues, not in the traditional sense that everything is dirty and dangerous in the developing countries, and everything is perfect and fine in the developed world. It is not the case. At least that's not what the science tells us. Now, of course, we have a number of other zoonotic diseases that people have heard of over the time, over the last 10, 15 years, zoonotic diseases. The last one here, previously known as swine flu, is influenza A, H1N1, is also a zoonotic disease, you could say. These are some of the outbreaks or the start of international outbreaks, in some cases global outbreaks, over that period from 96 to 2007. So you can see lots of bacteria parasites and lots of viruses moving out from a number of different countries. If we try to map them here, we could say that we have a group that we call new or emerging zoonotic agents. We have a group there in the middle that are related to food or water contamination. And then we have a group down here that we typically refer to as the endemic zoonosis or neglected zoonosis. So the group down there, we actually have very good tools how to even eradicate them from a number of countries, but we are not using them. In the food and water area, we have very good tools. In the new emerging areas, we don't necessarily have very good tools, and therefore they are spreading maybe a little bit faster. Now, when we talk about zoonosis, we have to talk about the interface between humans and animals. So we want to be able to manage the risk of the diseases at that interface between human and animal. That means that we have to have interdisciplinary, intersectoral interaction. and we need to have collaboration. That sounds easy, but it's very difficult, and it's very difficult all over the world. It is especially difficult in the places where you have had the systems for a very long time, which means it's especially difficult in the developed countries, whereas in some developing countries that are starting this, it could be easier. Now, just to make sure that we are all on the same page, because so knows, I'm not sure that everybody out there, here of course everybody knows, but out there in the real world, if I say so knows, I don't think everybody knows what it is. So this is what it is. Now, I was asked to talk about One World, One Health, and since Janet told me, of course I put it in the title. But I really don't... Yeah, because she warned me that if I didn't do it, I would have problems with Lorette, and nobody wants to have problems with Lorette. But actually, I don't want to talk about One World, One Health, because One World, One Health is a stupid name. I mean, if I go out there and try to say something to people, well, we are dealing with One World, One Health. Oh, you are? You're dealing with putting hospitals all over the world? No. We're dealing with One World, One Health. How would people know what One World, One Health means? I cannot see how they would do that. Okay, that's the one thing. The other thing is, it's presented as something new. It's not new. Veterinary public health is exactly the same. It's exactly the same. We've talked about zoonosis control before. Some are now presenting it as One World, One Health. We would like to say we deal with the diseases at the human-animal interface. Okay, maybe that's not so easy to understand, but I tried it off on a couple of Danish kids, and they understood it. And if Danish kids understand it, I guess everybody would be able to understand it. So we are just putting new spin or new words to the same old thing. I think it makes sense. It could make sense if One World, One Health was a good description. I don't know if it is, but human-animal interface is something that we will try to promote in the future in the same way. So it's not new. We've talked about farm to fork or farm to table or boat to throat, or there are a bit other. So the other day I heard somebody, it was probably a Scandinavian, because normally you wouldn't say that in Visa. He said, no, it's grass to ass. What? I mean, he was probably from Norway or, I don't know. But we are not saying that this agenda is not important. It's really very important that everybody knows that these diseases that we've been talking about that are spreading out over the world and go global, that they are important. I think that's not really for discussion. So then can this be done by business? This is very clear. No, it cannot. So we don't need to discuss all this business interaction anymore. Okay, maybe we can discuss a little bit more since I have some more time. But if we want to deal with these issues, you need to have a governmental system that is sustainable. And normally, I have never seen anywhere where business is supporting a sustainable governmental system. I have never seen that. Government has to deal with this as a primary actor. You need to have a well-functioning veterinary and public health system, and I've never seen anywhere where the veterinary system is supported by the business. Of course, you can say that business pays taxes, and therefore, that's fine. That's like everybody else. But these issues are some of the issues that you cannot deal with just by saying, well, business should do it. Can it then be done without business? No. And it's not because I'm necessarily negative, I mean, that I just say no all the time. But this is, I think it's very clear that if we have learned something from our international discussions in the Codex Commission, in OIE, in FAO and WHO, we need to deal with things involving all stakeholders. That meetings like this is exactly representative of that thinking, that we need to talk to all stakeholders, we need to interact with all stakeholders, and we need to communicate, meaning that we have to listen also, even if that's sometimes a little bit difficult. But the other thing is that the responsibility for this often lies with the producer. So that's part of industry. So the responsibility for sending out salmonella enteritis all over the world so that lots of people can get sick and die every year, the responsibility lies with the producer. We have to also realize that, and business has to realize that. And then the cost, if we wanted to do something, in some of these areas we can do something easily, in some it's more difficult, but if we wanted to do something, where do we put the cost? So it needs to be in some way internalized in whatever we're doing. And I don't know where it should be put. In some countries, they put it firmly into industry. They say, you need to produce a safe product, it's your problem. In other countries, they say, well, the benefit, if we could get rid of salmonella, would actually accrue to the society as such. So the benefit is actually for society. So society should also be involved in, you know, so it's not so easy to, as just to say, well, business has to carry the cost. Well, the benefit is coming in another area. So shouldn't there be some sort of interaction and discussion about how that could be done? And that discussion, I don't think, that it's certainly not going on in Codex, probably because Codex is the most boring place you can ever go to, and nothing is happening, and you know everybody falls asleep, even worse than in a meeting like this, listening to a Dane. Of course, we realize that we're talking about something complex. So even if we try to talk about simple solutions, we know that there are a lot of different issues here. There are many different types of pathogens, zoonotic pathogens, and we have interaction from different areas, from the water side, from the food side, but also from the environment. And that's a very important one that hasn't been dealt with so much. So we need to build capacity in governmental systems so that we can detect these pathogens, so that we have policies and sustainable programs for the prevention and control, and maybe even the eradication, so that we can actually reduce the human health risk. And we know that in some way it has to be embedded in sustainable governmental systems with interaction with the stakeholders. So the triangle we have here is between people, the environment, and animals. And if we look at the how we would like to manage this issue, if we look at this line between environment and people, we would look at the physical and chemical factors. If we look over here between the animals and people, we have nutrition issues, husbandry issues, and down here we have issues in relation to the pest control, nature conservation, and things like that. So we are in a very complicated system, we realize that, but we do believe that if we try to at least move these three different sectors together, we will end up with something that's not called One World, One Health, but human-animal interface. Now, at the international level, there are three big actors in this. Some are bigger than others. Of course, WHO is the biggest, but I just made the circles the same size so that the other people wouldn't be aggravated. OIE is extremely small. OIE means the World Animal Health Organization. OIE, the World Animal Health Organization. It's because it's in France. Can you imagine? They've been there since 28. They never had a director general that was not French. That's amazing. It's almost like the World Bank that's never had a president that was not... Okay, yeah. Well, so these three organizations are working together already and are trying to do something from farm to table at the human-animal interface. Just to mention two short examples. The first one is that we have created a global early warning system between the three partners. That was not there before. We initiated it 2 or 3 years ago. It should have been done 40 years ago. It's really strange that we haven't done it, but it's the same problem in the national government that often the different sectors don't talk to each other. And then for the rest of the chain, we have initiated the InfoSan, which is a network of all the food safety authorities. So we have a system where we can get to all food safety authorities or all chief veterinary officers very quickly if something urgently happened. And we can also use the system to try to build capacity in countries in relation to these things. But we do also have international regulations at the international level that relates to this. So international health regulations are the regulations that all members of WHO have to follow. OIE has a health code that all their members have to follow, and that is global health diplomacy with a stick. I know that sometimes when people talk about global health, it's a little bit spurious, unless you listen to Nick Drager, who's not here. He knows what it is, but lots of other people are a little bit confused. This is global health diplomacy with a stick. So, you know, you tell the countries you have to do this. If you don't report about swine flu, we will get you. And of course, they have no way of getting, I mean, WHO has no way of getting the countries, but they will be shown to be not following up on their promises in the international system. So the, some of the strategic action that would be needed is that we need to be able to look at the system in a holistic way. We need to find out if there are preventative action that we can actually do, and then we need to find the right place at the chain to reduce the risk of transmission of these diseases from animal. And just to take the salmonella example, it is actually realistic to eliminate salmonella, and we know that from a number of countries. Unfortunately, the first country was Sweden, not Denmark. But then, of course, that resulted in Denmark trying to do it, because they, we always in Denmark, we always want to do the same as the Swedes, you know. We always have more problems with it, but that's another thing. But the fact is that we now know that you can eliminate. Eliminate is not the same as eradicate. Eradicate is that it's gone from the face of the earth. Eliminate is that you actually get it down to a very low level, and we know that that can be done, and we know that all countries can do that if they want to. So the overall objective in relation to this is to make sure that we have human-animal disease surveillance in a coordinated way, and most countries don't have that at the moment. That we use animals as sentinels for humans, not the other way around, which many times we do. Many times we look at the disease and we find it in the humans, say, oh, that's very good because now we can prevent the disease in the animals. What? I mean, it does not make sense. It should be that that we find the disease in the animals first, and then we deal something with something at the preventative action. And then, clearly, in this area, as in most other areas, international action is so much more logical than national action, especially for developing countries. There's no need why each of the 194 member states of WHO have to rethink everything on their own. We should do it together, that's very clear. Science-based solutions we have already in the system at the international level, the risk analysis framework. Codex Alimentarius uses the risk analysis framework and is based on the WTO agreements, both the SPS agreement and the TBT agreement. This means that if we have, when we have the international standards in Codex Alimentarius, actually countries have to follow these standards unless they have better science on their own. In the SPS agreement, it also says that if there is investment needed in developing countries that are exporting food, developed countries should go there and help them. They should not just block the products at the borders. So this is the vision and the goal that we have tried to formulate in relation to a strategy to do something at the human-animal interface in WHO. We know that there are significant public health risks. We know that they are cross-sectoral. We know that we need to collaborate better. We know that many problems could have been avoided if we did collaborate the right way. And we know that humans do not need to be the sentinels for animals. And most of these diseases can be significantly reduced in all countries if we do it the right way. So the issue is that agriculture and health needs to get their act together and work together. What will drive improvement? Realization of the full disease burden, I believe, because at the moment we don't really know. Realization of the potential effect, which is both on health and economy for global outbreaks. We know everybody has heard about that, and the swine flu issue is a big issue in relation to that. Clarification of the cost and who should cover the cost, which is an important discussion that has not been clarified. Looking at the food production system in a holistic way, like it's suggested in the discussions here. And then having global standards and global sharing of the examples of solutions. And then just the last thing, agricultural subsidies, we haven't talked about that at all. The amount of money that's used in agricultural subsidies is immense, incroyable. You have to say here in Canada, yes, with a little bit of a Danish accent. The amount of money that is put into agricultural production like that in the US and in the EU could take care of all problems in relation to zoonosis all over the world just like that. Just give it to us for a year and that's it. And the whole system of agricultural subsidies is clearly a skewed way of trying to deal with the global market. Clearly. So with one hand, we're giving assistance to developing countries to develop this or that. And with the other hand, we give significantly more money to our own farmers who are already fat not necessarily fat everywhere, but, you know, they have lots of money. And why is there no discussion of how we should take some of this money and actually put it in the developing countries so that they could produce in a way that would be more healthy for them and for people in the developed world? I don't understand that. Thank you. I'm over.
Thanks, Jürgen. Yesterday we learned about the International Toilet Museum, and today we get the grass-to-ass process from the World Health Organization. This is a rich experience, isn't it? Let me just say to anyone, any child in Denmark watching online, please direct your complaints to Jürgen and not to the...